Governor Mike Huckabee, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Ann. Thanks for visiting with me.
Well, I think it's so awesome. I must tell you, though, over the years, I have really enjoyed your show. And I hate the fact that you don't have it.
Well, you know, one of the things I'm hearing a lot on the book tour is that very thing. People are saying, gosh, we really miss your show. That was kind of what we did on Saturday night. And I'm thinking, wow, it's comforting. But I loved it. I had a great time doing it. But, you know, it's time to consider some other options in life, as you may be aware.
Yes, I know. And I think that why did you decide to? I mean, I used to listen to you and all the time. And, you know, the last time you said you didn't quite feel you had the fire in the belly. What's made you decide this time that maybe it's the time to get out there and do something?
Well, I think our world is in such a complete mess. The threat that we have from Islamic jihadism is part of what drives it. But also, when I look at our domestic policies, the fact that so many people in the American economy are hurting, people work harder than they worked a year ago, and they have less to show for it. People that once had full-time jobs now have part-time jobs. People that once had benefits have lost them. And those who have benefits, like insurance, are paying more for it than they can afford. And I just don't think there are many people in Washington who have a clue. They live in a bubble, and they're oblivious to the way that the struggle for many Americans has continued.
And as you're traveling around doing your book tour, what are you hearing? You know, we've had, I guess we could call President Obama Mr. Slick, right, for the last 8 years. Before that, we had George Bush, I guess, cowboy. You know, is it time for more of a folksy type president?
I think it's time for more of an effective president, somebody who's governed effectively. And one of the reasons that I'm seriously moving in this direction is because I did govern for 10 and a half years in the bluest state in America. A lot of people don't realize that, but when I was governor of Arkansas, I had the most lopsided legislature in the entire nation, more than Massachusetts or Vermont or Maine or Oregon. And I learned how to govern. And what I see in this administration is that there's no semblance of understanding of how do you actually work with legislators to get things done, to build on your principles without compromising them, but at the same time to come to a consensus in the art of governing, and that's something we're really lacking in America today.
Well, I agree. You know, I just had Congressman Jeff Duncan on with me this morning, and then you were the follow-up act to Jeff this morning, but he was saying that that leadership in the House talks about not putting up legislation because, quote, it can't get through the Senate, even though they now have the Senate, but they can't get through the Senate. And he says, you know, we need to just do our job here and let the Senate worry about getting it through.
Totally agree with the congressman. The idea that you have a defeatist attitude is part of the reason that Washington is so dysfunctional. Now, I understand that you don't put bills on the floor that you know aren't going to pass, but if you can pass them in the House, then you start exerting a level of leadership and cooperation with the Senate. You've made a great point. The Republicans have control of the Senate, and I know it used to be that you had to have 60 votes, but Harry Reid has already kind of challenged that philosophy and said, well, not really. We'll just do it on a simple majority. So the Republicans, using the Harry Reid version, could pass what they want to, put it on the president's desk, and make him either sign it or veto it and explain to the American people why he wants them to continue to do things like pay taxes on their wheelchairs and a lot of other ridiculous things that are happening to people, like, and it's particularly folks that are working in a small business. Why do they have to only work 20 or get to work 29 hours a week so their employer won't be subjected to the onerous rules of Obamacare? Those things ought to be placed on the president's desk in one- or two-page bills, not 2,000-page bills, and force him to take a look at every one of those and explain his decision to the American people.
You know, I couldn't agree more, and I don't know what the hesitancy is to do this. But as you watch President Obama here in his final 2 years, it looks like it's going to be a runaway game. It's like he didn't realize that he lost the election.
I think, Ann, that's the greatest just bewilderment that I have of this president. Here's a person who before the election said that his policies were on the ballot and that that's what was really being decided. Well, his policies were so utterly rejected in light of an overwhelming year, and I think it's important to note not just the taking back the Senate, adding to the gains of the House, but there were 910 legislators at the state level that shifted from Democrat to Republican in this last cycle. That's the most in the history of America in a single year shift. And yet this president goes out of the State of the Union and pretends that he just won the election. Well, Mr. President, to borrow your words, elections have consequences, and you lost.
And so I don't understand why the Congress and the Senate have this hesitancy to just go out there with guns blazing and do what's necessary.
Well, I think it's a timidity on the part of some of the leadership that this doesn't make sense. And I would suggest that if they really want to remain leaders, they'd start acting like leaders and not be afraid. I mean, if the only thing they wanted was to say they're in the majority, but they're not going to use it for anything that is helpful to the people of the country and to advance and change the policies, then we might as well be the minority, because the results are the same. Doesn't matter. Leadership ought to mean just that, leadership. And majority ought to exercise some sense of mandate. If they don't do it, then there's no rationale for them keeping the majority and staying in leadership.
You know, I had, I'm big in politics with all our politicians from up there, and I had Congressman Mick Mulvaney the other day on, and I asked him what was the thing that bothered him the most. And he said, you know, we've got all these big issues that they put out there, but we seem to have forgotten that the debt, the $18 trillion, is the one that could bring our country down because we're not addressing it. It's like business as usual in Washington.
And I think that's frustrating to a lot of American people who know that they can't spend money they don't have, borrow money they can't afford to pay back. And so they're looking at their own government and saying, why would my government be doing something that they would put me in prison for? And I think a lot of Americans feel disconnected from what I describe in my book as the bubble of Washington, D.C., where these elites live, and they're not affected by economic downturns because it doesn't touch them. They're immune from it. But the people in the rest of America are certainly subject to it.
Absolutely. You know, I was reading, I don't have your book, but I'm going to get your book. And you're going, of course, today, Friday, you are going to be at Barnes & Noble at 12 o'clock right there in Greenville. But I was reading the one about your quip on social media from your book, God, Guns, Grits, and Gravy. I love it because it is so true about what social media does to people.
Well, a lot of people have almost substituted personal relationships for some online relationship. And one of the things that I wanted to do in the book of God, Guns, Grits, and Gravy is to describe how there is such a vast cultural disconnect between people living in Washington, New York, and Hollywood and the people who live in places like South Carolina, or in what I call the land of God, Guns, Grits, and Gravy, therefore the name of the book. And what I see is that there's a sense in which people out here in the flyover country, they sometimes think, well, maybe we're all alone. Maybe there aren't many who think like me who still would say, hey, I'm praying for you, or hey, I've got a gun in my home, or yes, we have grits with cheese and shrimp and all the things that are normal to us, but that seem so strange to people who are living in the bubbles, yet who sort of set the table for our entire culture. I want people to know they're not alone. Their views and their values are not only okay, but frankly, they ought to embrace them and celebrate them. And I do think there's a whole lot of people out here in the middle of America who just need to be encouraged and reminded that the way they live their lives is not something that they should run from or be ashamed of.
I think you're so right on that. I just went through a thing on my radio station. We had a Tea Party person on, and I got obliterated on Facebook for having that view on the radio station. And, you know, it is the progressives that are out there slamming. And the Tea Party, the Middle America, the everyday person sits back and goes, God, what happened here? I think like she thinks. I think like this person thinks.
Well, one of the things I address in the book is how hostile people are in the name of tolerance. And one of the chapters deals with how that intolerance has become the new definition of tolerance.
Exactly.
And that uniformity has become the new definition of diversity. When people on the left say they want diversity, what they mean is they want uniformity. They want people to conform to their views or else. And when people say that they really do want to have many points of view, that's not true. They want one point of view. They want it to be the point of view of the far left. Anyone who wants to have a view that is pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, that is pro-family, they're told to shut up or we'll put you out of business.
Or how about just the First Amendment? How about that one?
You know, I wonder, where are the hippies from the 60s? Because many of them, you know, marched on college campuses and burned flags to protest what
yes.
they felt was a violation of the First Amendment, crying out for free speech. And now the one place on this planet where free speech is most threatened is the college campus that once were the bastions of free speech. And now political correctness says if you have a certain viewpoint, we won't allow you on the campus, certainly won't allow you to be a commencement speaker, don't want to hear your point of view. It's really goes to what I try to, and I give numerous examples in the book, that this is a clear example where uniformity has become rejected, or rather uniformity has become the new norm instead of real diversity. But they still pretend that this is diversity, and it isn't.
I couldn't agree with you more, Governor Huckabee. You know, how has the response been to your book out there on your tour?
And it's been great. In fact, we'll debut at number 3 on the New York Times bestseller list. I'm sure that'll shake them up in New York. But the fact is, it's being incredibly well received. People who read it say it's not anything like what they expected because it's not the safe, sterile, and sanitized, consultant-vetted book that most people would write if they're going to run for office. It's earthy. It's vivid. And I think it's entertaining. I think people are reading it, and they're having fun reading it. And people in the South are loving it because they feel like somebody understands them, is communicating not only with them, but for them.
Wow. Well, I've got to get a copy of it. I wish I could be up there today at 12 o'clock at Barnes & Noble. How long are you going to be there? Any idea?
We'll be there. Normally, our stops are about an hour.
Okay.
So we'll be there from noon till probably around 1 o'clock. I suggest people come early, and we'll be happy to sign their books. We also take a picture that they can download for free, and we're looking forward to a great turnout today in Greenville.
That sounds great. Hey, listen, when you do run for president, I hope you'll put Greenwood on your list, and I hope you'll come to our gallery. I own two businesses, WCRS and a jewelry business, Sharp Facets. I hope you'll come and sit down in our gallery and talk for an hour. I'd love to do that.
And I look forward to it. Thank you very much for having me today.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking your time. Have a good one, Governor Huckabee.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.